You're listening to the Youth Critic Podcast on KHZ Network. Find us on Facebook at DecibelUNG Radio and find us on Twitter at DecibelUNG. If you like this episode, please leave a like and comment on our iTunes page at KHZ Network. And now for the podcast.
What's so special about your wife?
Well, Dr. Marsha Fieldstone, I think. It was like magic.
Sleepless in Seattle?
That's what you called him on the show because he can't sleep.
And now 2,000 women want his number.
Dear Sleepless in Seattle, you're the most attractive man I ever laid ears on.
The guy could be a crackhead.
Actually, he sounded nice.
You know, it's easier to be killed by terrorists than it is to get married over the age of 40.
That's not true. That statistic is not true.
That's right. It's not true. But it feels true.
Sandy has a girlfriend, Glenda. She's a weightlifter. It's not like her neck is bigger than her head.
Oh, no. I'm not asking you to set me up.
What about Walter? Walter?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Youth Critic Retrospectives. I am your host, Kale Smith. Joining me today is Justin Mayhew.
Howdy, you guys. Happy July.
And behind me, there is a vending machine.
Yes. It's quite a rumble noise.
Yep. If you hear a rumbling noise that goes in and out, that is the noise because we are filming in a kind of a conference storage room today.
Break room?
Break room. We are going to be here for this episode.
And break out the ramen noodles.
Yep. So today we are going to be talking about two movies, since we're going to be kind of doing a catch-up episode, since we didn't technically have one last week because we were doing the 48, and we just kind of been busy here at the Youth Critic Studios, and me and Justin's kind of been working on some projects, and yada, 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 that's all boring. So today...
Well, it was much more exciting than you make it sound, obviously. I mean, it was actually quite fun, I thought.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's always fun. But today we are going to be talking about Sleepless in Seattle and The Firm. So on the Jurassic Park and the Last Action Hero episode, we've mentioned that there was other successful movies that came out after Jurassic Park, like, you know, that was kind of different than, you know, it was a different situation than 1982, where just almost everything kind of bombed because E.T. kind of was the sci-fi movie, and then we got nothing but sci-fi movies afterwards. So, but for 1993, there we go.
It's very, very quiet.
Yeah. So for 1993, Sleepless in Seattle and The Firm got lucky in that they were not movies with dinosaurs, or they were not big blockbusters, and therefore they were kind of big hits at the box office, primarily because they were counter-programming. They were the counter-programming that was necessary for... it was kind of a counter-programming summer right after that. So, Justin, do you have any thoughts on this in general?
The counter-programming?
Yes.
Oh, it was actually a pretty good move. You had sort of a palate cleanser, if you will. You know, something... people were looking for something romantic, you know, to go to after watching the dinosaurs wreak havoc, you know. And so you had this kind of film that was touted as a sweet little thing with Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks at the height of their game. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it's a really successful marketing campaign for this movie. And you can't go wrong with this couple and making a movie like this at that time. I think it was perfect, you know, to
yeah.
do so.
Yeah, we'll start with Sleepless in Seattle, and then we'll move
right.
into The Firm.
The Firm.
Yeah, that's the thing about Sleepless in Seattle was it very much is a Valentine's movie, but somehow released in the summer, mm-hmm. right before the 4th of July.
Yeah, they even mentioned Valentine's Day. So
yeah, well, the movie ends on Valentine's yeah. Day. So I think... So yeah, it's a romantic movie, and the oddest part is about this movie is that Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, like, they're pegged as, like, this great, like, on-screen couple that, you know, when they're together, it's dynamite, but, I mean, they're only in the movie together, what, 5 minutes or less?
They have one brief meeting in the middle of a road in
yeah.
Seattle.
And then, she almost got run over.
Right. And then on the top of the Empire State Building, after she pulls a graduate move on her, you know, really sweetheart, Bill Pullman played, fiance.
Right.
Know, basically standing him up at the altar, if you will, you know?
Yeah, I mean, basically, I mean, I can't think of anything worse than standing up the altar than being, like, dumped on Valentine's Day.
Right. And then she had also agreed to be his fiancé, so they were were betrothed, so.
Yeah, they were very much in agreement, and then, of course, Tom Hanks, just a character, just comes into her life, mm-hmm. and basically is, you know, right, and basically, you know, his story of his dead wife charms her to basically this imagination of, like, I want to meet this person.
Yep.
It's basically a whole movie about meeting someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and usually...
Well, Nora Ephron did When Harry Met Sally, which was also about meeting people.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Met is in the title of that movie. Yeah. And yeah, that's the thing about this movie is that if you were hoping back in the 90s or even looking back, like, oh, Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan, you know, they're in this movie and... gonna be together and it's gonna be this lovely like romance of walking in the park and whatnot. No, that's not it. This is basically a movie that's held together by this one kid.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Hanks' son. Go
yes,
ahead.
It's if you will, it's really a very throwback movie. You know, it's very much akin to there was a movie in the late 60s called The Courtship of Eddie's Father or something like that.
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's very much like that. He's an old-fashioned 50s or 60s style romantic comedy. It was not. It's not like what you'd expect from a 90s or 1000s romantic comedy. You know, the boy meets girl. They have the meet cute. You know, and then they have the building romance, and then you have the breakup period.
You
then
mean
you have
the typical
reconciliation.
Lifetime movie?
Right. Yes. Well, I mean, a lot of romantic comedies follow that structure. You know, and this one does not. It has a much more old-fashioned. Yeah, it's very similar to The Courtship of Eddie's Father, which is a film from 1963, directed by Vincent Minnelli, Glenn Ford, and Ron Howard as the son. But it's very similar to that one in a lot of respects, that the son is trying to play a Cupid for his father,
okay.
You know?
Yeah, and that's this movie is Tom Hanks' son is very much just Jonah. He's very much just... like, I need to find my depressed, sad father something to do. A soulmate, just so he can get on with his life.
Pardon me. Excuse me.
I need to do this because, you know, he's kind of already gotten over his mother's death. I'm assuming you wouldn't go on this journey and still grieve.
Well, they did say it was like a year and a half later. You're still talking about Sleepless.
Yeah, right? Sleepless,
yeah. They have the little card at the bottom that says, you know, a year and a half later.
Okay.
You know, so
okay,
it's
yeah.
been a while.
And it's time for Dad to get right. on with it. You know, or become happy again. Because, I mean, you see in the flashbacks when he's talking about his wife to the psychologist on the radio, or the therapist, I should say, yeah. And you just see the flashbacks of how he made her happy and how... you know, or how she made him happy, excuse me, and you're like, wow, he really wants something else. He really needs, you know, that again in his
right.
life.
Yeah, he's basically stuck right now with a vapor, a beer-stealing ghost.
Yeah, he's stuck with the memory. He's stuck
right.
with, yeah.
Right, but it's the scene where they have her materialize, and she asks for half of his beer,
uh-huh.
you know, so she's... He's basically reduced to being, you know, romantically tied to a beer-stealing ghost.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, boy. Yeah. So, thank you, Jonah, for trying to look out for your dad. And Meg Ryan hears this over the radio mm-hmm. in Baltimore.
Yes.
Which,
most of the time, they filmed actually in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure they did.
The only thing they really did was on the Chesapeake Bay waterfront. Gorgeous, you know.
Okay.
Which is one of the things I did like about the film is the photography and the location setting.
Oh, yeah,
you know?
It looks great.
The very first shot of the film is that really long telephoto shot of the graveyard and of just Jonah and Sam
is,
on
yeah,
the top of the hill.
Uh-huh.
And then they crane up, and then you see the mourners and a superimposed Chicago skyline in the background. It's a really good composition. I really do appreciate the photography in this movie.
And here it goes again.
Yes,
sorry we're being amateur on this.
The soda machine attacks.
But yeah, that's a really good shot. And it's a really good shot because it kind of emphasizes how, like, distant Sam and Jonah are from the rest of the world. Yep. It, you know, it's visual storytelling at its best. Yep. And it's Nora Ephron's second movie.
Really?
Yeah. Well, it's the second movie she directed.
Yeah, it was Harry Met Sally was her first, then.
No, that was Rob Reiner.
Rob Reiner directed that. Wrote it.
She wrote it.
She wrote that, yeah.
She wrote another movie beforehand. I'm trying to pull up her IMDb, but it's very... it was another, like...
This Is My Life was the first
one. Yeah, that's it, that's it.
Yes. And then Sleepless. Oh, well, I mean, she wrote Silkwood, which I thought was a really good film, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, she wrote before these two movies.
Yeah, Silkwood was a good one. That's one I'd recommend you to see.
Mm-hmm. And did anyone see Heartburn or Cookie?
I haven't. I've seen Silkwood. I've seen When Harry Met Sally. My Blue Heaven, I've seen. The Super. Haven't seen This Is My Life, I don't think.
Okay.
Yeah, Mixed Nuts, Michael.
I saw Mixed Nuts. It's not the best.
Nah, it's Steve Martin kind of goofing off, if you will, you know.
Mm-hmm. I've never seen Michael. I've seen parts of You've Got Mail.
You've Got Mail is very similar in a lot of ways to Sleepless in Seattle.
Oh, yeah, because they're apart for, like, most of the movie.
And it's a little more antagonistic. You know, he's running a local bookstore, and she's managing, like a Barnes & Noble kind of thing coming into the neighborhood or something.
Uh-huh.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, like a local bookstore.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I heard a lot about it from the We Hate Movies podcast, because they covered that one.
Yeah.
So that's really the thing about this movie is, you know, she is in Seattle basically becoming obsessed with, or not Seattle, Baltimore.
Baltimore, yeah.
She becomes obsessed over Jonah's story, Jonah and Sam's story. And while this is happening, Sam is, like, getting back into the dating life, but it's with a different woman. And Jonah's like, well, wait a minute, I found this letter from Kate. And
From Anne.
Oh, is it Anne?
A letter from Anne, yeah. Anne Reed is Meg Ryan's character.
Okay, I don't know why I thought Kate. But anyway... she gets a letter from Anne, he gets it, and he's like, this is actually not that bad, you should look into it, Dad. Tom Hanks is whatever, but other than that, what else is interesting about this movie, because I saw this like 2 weeks ago.
Rob Reiner is a cameo appearance, roughly, as one of Sam Baldwin's friends, the big time director, the guy who actually did The Princess Bride.
Mm-hmm. And When Harry Met Sally.
And Harry Met Sally, and the mockumentary.
Spinal Tap.
Yes, Spinal Tap. I need to be struck dead by the gods of rock for forgetting the name of that momentarily, because Spinal Tap is freaking awesome. That's a fucking awesome movie!
It is. So, and then you have David Hyde Pierce that comes in for like a, or yeah, David Hyde Pierce.
From Frasier, yep.
Yeah, comes in for like 2 minutes.
And Rosie O'Donnell, she's entertaining.
Mm-hmm. And Victor Garber, Tom Hanks' wife comes in, Rita Wilson. So it's a really good cast of actors and actresses that are all funny, all like character actors. I think Bill Pullman was like the only like, And of course Tom Hanks, they're the only like serious actors. Mm-hmm. Everyone else is like a character actor.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, at the time Tom Hanks was a comedic character actor. They broke out and became dramatic later. You know, like
right
Saving
around
Private
time.
Ryan. It was a few years later. You know, that was like 96, 98, something.
Well,
like that.
And Philadelphia was this year too.
Was that 93?
Yes.
Oh, that was 94. Okay. So he was starting
Forrest
to get into his
Gump
dramatic.
Forrest Gump was also was 94.
So he was getting into the more serious acting at that time, yes.
Right. And he's giving a good performance here. I mean, he really is very paternal to Jonah, he plays the paternal part very well, and then at the end he plays the romantic part very well. I mean, Tom Hanks is all never. Has Tom Hanks given a bad performance?
Oh, sure. Larry Crown. That was terrible.
Okay, yeah, sure. God. Okay, sure. But yeah, so it's just a really competent, well-made romantic comedy.
I disagree.
Oh, really?
Oh, yes. It's not a very good or very well-made movie.
Oh, really? Go ahead.
They keep referencing An Affair to Remember with Cary Grant.
Uh-huh.
Come on. You know, that's such a superior film to this. And Cary Grant is such a superior actor to Tom Hanks. Not to say that there's anything wrong with with Tom Hanks, but An Affair to Remember, and you're going to have this kind of watered-down, kind of smarmy thing, you know, and you're going to compare it to An Affair to Remember with Cary Grant, the Cary Grant.
Yeah.
And so you're basically rubbing our noses in the fact that there's a better movie out there to watch.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, okay, fair enough. I mean, Cary Grant is a much more perfect actor for this role.
Well, for any movie.
Okay, sure. I mean,
it's hard to beat Cary Grant in anything.
He was a good actor.
And secondly, my main concern is, God, you know, everybody, I remember we were talking about last time with The Last Action Hero that there were people who thought that Austin O'Brien was kind of annoying. Child actor?
You thought Jonah was...
No. I thought I heard you say that some people had thought so.
Yeah.
I
actually thought that, too.
But. Really? I'm the opposite. I think that Austin was acceptable, that he didn't bug me too bad.
But what about here?
Here, I wanted to toss that motherfucking little brat right off the top of that Empire State Building, man.
Was it more the character or the performance?
Both. I mean, the character was not anything really... You know, basically, the kid has to mope and be really weirdly impulsive all the time. And there's something about the wavelength of Ross...
You mean Ross?
The character Ross, whatever his name is. The actor playing Jonah.
Okay, yeah.
There's something about his face just make me angry.
I don't know. It was just a typical cute kid thing. But, I mean, his character is really holding the movie because other than his character, I'm like... I mean, he's holding it together because, I mean, he is, like, connecting the two.
Sure, yeah, he's sort of the MacGuffin, if you will.
He's the MacGuffin. Mm-hmm. But he's also, you know, for me, he was the one attribute holding it together because I'm just wondering, why do I care if these people get together when they don't know each other?
Right, like, and I didn't care.
it would have just been too... odd if it was. I mean, I guess it would have been a much more tougher act for the two characters to have never met and then met in one area at the one particular moment and then had that moment. So I guess for the sake of the character, he's basically not just a MacGuffin, but he's also like the screenwriter itself.
Right.
Like he's just the screenwriter in a manifested. He's just basically the thing keeping the whole story going.
And quite frankly, I didn't think that Victoria or Walter were really all that bad. You know, I actually felt rather sorry for their characters, you know, that they're trying to be workmanlike, you know, put in the effort of a relationship, and nobody seems to care. They're surrounded by, you know, jerks who don't care about trying to actually put an effort into a relationship, you know?
Yeah, and that's...
I mean, you know, she goes out shopping and makes an effort to cook for them, and Walter is always acquiescing and
supportive. Walter's a great guy.
Right, and I feel I actually am sympathetic to those two characters.
Maybe they should get together.
Have a sequel of Walter and Victoria have a spontaneous affair somehow. They meet in Chicago.
Yeah, why not? I mean, yeah, that's the thing about this movie is Meg Ryan, like, she was totally on board. I mean, was there a scene at all where she was like, I don't know about this before the phone call?
She talked to Rosie O'Donnell's character a couple of times, but they were talking when they're watching An Affair to Remember. You know?
Okay.
So that's and she mentions the fact that she has some, you know, feelings about this voice she heard on the radio.
Oh, I meant beforehand. Yeah. Before the radio message.
Oh, you mean at the very beginning where...
Yeah,
they seem like he's trying to remember all the names of her relatives, you know, and he's actually trying to coach himself, and he's got presents and little stories, and he jokes about his allergies, and, you know, the guy's guilty of having allergies. I have allergies.
Yeah. Open the windows in late April of Georgia.
Yeah.
You'll see the allergies come out of me.
Yep. I just think that it's a superficial, manipulative romantic comedy. And quite frankly, romantic comedies are manipulative. I just saw through this one, you know. For instance,
and her character is weird. I guess it is. We all have that moment where we're dreaming about someone, but for her, like, she goes to almost stalker levels about it.
Oh, yeah. I would say that if you're interested in a romantic comedy, I would say something like, you know, The Holiday, Notting Hill, Love Actually. Those are all superior films, you know? And if you want to go old school, Clark Gable and Claudette Colbert in It Happened One Night. The famous, you know, hitchhiking scene, and they're traveling across country on a bus. She's the heiress trying to go on incognito, and he's the reporter trying to get the scoop on her running away. She's another runaway bride, you know. Very, very good film. Clark Gable, Claudette Colbert. Very good romantic couple, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And like I say, you know, Love Actually, which has like 10 friggin' awesome love stories that span a year.
Isn't that like the ultimate love story for this age?
Right, it culminates in Christmas with Bill Nighy as the washed-up rock star doing, you know, silly covers of Christmas songs. You know, he's sort of a version of Robert Palmer, you know. And that's like the ultimate romantic comedy right there, Love Actually, you know?
Yeah. So, let's talk about the ending, because we kind of
aside from the fact that kid should have been thrown over the edge of the building?
Or just, like, punish and Tom Hanks just screaming at the top of his lungs. I mean, because that is some holy... That would have... If I had done that as a kid, I mean, that would have been the end of my life. That would have... My life would cease to have existed.
And
there would have been therapy.
Right. And Jonah and that Gabby girl, man, there's some little miscreants, you know. They're growing up to have a life of crime.
Yeah, they're basically going to commit a lot of credit card fraud.
Yeah.
That's the thing about this whole fucking movie. The two people that are trying, the people that are, like, instigating this whole thing, including Anne, they're all, like, they all just grow to be terrible people or, like, things that are totally out of bounds, like, totally out of reason. But, and I know the excuse is, but it's out of love.
Mm-hmm.
But still, like, mm-hmm. Holy shit.
Yeah, the whole ends justify the means thing can be annoying sometimes.
Yeah.
I had forgotten about the Gabby character, Jonah's friend.
Uh-huh.
And that reminded me of one of the few scenes in the movie that actually made me chuckle was when Tom Hanks comes into Jonah's bedroom, and they're in that giant swiveling chair, and they have some vinyl, and they're listening to it, and she just looks up at him and says, "We're listening to the Beatles. If you play it backwards, it says Paul is dead." It's this really weird deadpan. You know, I actually got a chuckle out of that. And they're just sitting there with headphones on, just staring, like little, you know, Village of the Damned kids, you know.
Yeah.
And that was about the only part that I actually found amusing.
Yeah, so also, I mean, it's a really good ending. I mean, it's a really good ending to the movie because...
Well, I mean, it's wrapped up with a bow. I mean, if you have seen An Affair to Remember, then you know all the Statue of Liberty references and how that didn't work out in the Cary Grant movie. That she has a terrible accident. You know, they set it up that you're supposed to have seen An Affair to Remember. I think that's one problem for some people is that they haven't seen An Affair to Remember with Deborah Carr having an accident before she makes it to the Empire State Building.
Right.
And they show Meg Ryan in a similar thing. She's, you know, running across town from, I'm assuming it's the Chrysler Building.
It has to be, because is it the Chrysler Building? Like, it has to be in view.
Right.
Like,
they're both towards Midtown. Yeah. And
right.
The Chrysler Building is a number of blocks north. You're talking like half a mile away.
And doesn't the Chrysler Building have a restaurant in it?
It did. Not anymore, as far as I know, but it did.
Okay.
Which, the Chrysler Building, everyone, is a superior appearing building. The chrome-covered gargoyles on the top, and the little starbursts are much more entertaining than the bland granite of the Empire State Building.
Nice.
Even though it's a shorter building.
Yeah, so, I mean, the ending's charming. It's really well done. Or, like, the suspense of, oh, no, they're going to miss
they're gonna it. They're going to miss it again for the fourth time, or whatever it is.
Yeah, and it's really, you know, it's really well done. I'll give Nora that. Like, she did a really well job ending the movie and then having, you know, Tom and, Sam and Jonah show back up to get his jacket.
No, it's his backpack.
Backpack, yeah, which
is interesting that it turns out that Howard is the actual matchmaker. That's the teddy bear.
Oh.
The teddy bear, Howard, is the first one that she meets of Sam and Jonah's familiar friends.
Oh.
So she remembers, she pulls it out of the backpack, and when they come up to the top, she goes, "Who's this fella?" You know? So she meets Howard first. Howard is actually the first matchmaker.
Nice. Howard is the...
Howard's the actual matchmaker.
Yeah. It's a good... So with that, I think Sleepless in Seattle, it's a fun, cozy,
it's
nice...
It's competently made.
Competently made. Nora Ephron's not a bad filmmaker.
But if you want a better one, go see Notting Hill.
All right.
The Holiday...
The
Holiday's a good one. I like that. That's
Cameron Diaz and Kate Winslet.
Kate Winslet and Rupert. Is it Rupert Everett?
No, Rupert Everett's not in that movie. That is Jude Law.
Jack Black. Yes, that's a good one. There's so many more, I think, superior romantic comedies out there than this one, though.
I like the Parent Trap that Disney made.
Really?
I don't know. Maybe it's because I saw it when I was a kid. Mm-hmm.
Well, if you're going to go that way, then it'll be Freaky Friday for me. That's when I saw when I was a kid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I meant the Lindsay Lohan one.
Oh, the remake. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they have a Jamie Lee Curtis remake.
Yes.
Freaky Friday.
That was
too.
Also good.
Yeah. I'm not. I think about the Disney live action movies. I would say Escape to Witch Mountain and That Darn Cat. Are probably the better ones for me.
Okay.
If that Darn Cat, is that the one with the cat who's from space?
I don't remember.
Okay. Well, if it's not That Darn Cat, the one that I'm thinking about, it could be, is the one where the cat has a special collar that gives him psychic abilities so he can control things. And he has a little spaceship that's shaped like a cat head. It's got little cat ears on it and stuff like that. It's actually pretty cute. I don't know why, but it really was
Justin,
all my
I
thing.
Don't remember this yeah. movie at
it's,
all.
It's, check it out. It's cute. It's cute.
Okay.
It's
I
also
will.
From like 1968 or something.
Okay. So with that, do you want to move on to The Firm?
Sure. In conclusion, find a better romantic comedy. That's my recommendation.
What about Walter?
Walter yep. and I are engaged.
Today I consider myself the luckiest man on face of the earth.
When's the last time you were out there?
Jimmy Carter, 1978.
Things are a little different now.
I am having all of these fantasies about some man I have never even met who lives in Seattle.
It rains 9 months of the year in Seattle.
I know!
Tiramisu.
What is tiramisu?
You'll see.
Some woman is going to want me to do it to her, and I'm not going to know what it is.
You'll love it.
What if I never meet him? What if this man is my destiny and I never meet him?
Your destiny can be your doom. I want to meet you.
Dad, read this.
Where is Seattle? Right. Where's Baltimore? It's right there. Look, 1, 2, 3, 4, there's like 26 states.
But what I really don't want to do is end up always wondering what might.
I will maintain the confidence and preserve inviolate. The secrets of my client.
I will maintain the confidence and preserve inviolate the secrets of my client.
Mitch, the letter you got from Bendini, Lambert, and Locke was the only one sent out. We want you.
Do you have an offer in mind?
It includes a bonus schedule, and we'd lease you a new Mercedes.
Plus a low-interest mortgage.
As in home? With grass around?
And a two-car garage.
These are nice people, Abby. Okay, I'm more impressed with it than you are. You grew up with it. Did you ever think I'd make a six-figure salary?
Absolutely.
Since we deal primarily in tax and securities, our clients are very wealthy.
We keep each other's secrets.
I don't want anyone with family money. I'm not sure I follow.
They want you lean and hungry.
If all your money comes from one source, then you tend to be very loyal to that source.
Marty Kaczynski and Joe Hodges were killed. There was some kind of explosion on the boat.
Kay was scared. Did you know the men who died?
Yes.
You must be overwhelmed with grief.
People grieve in different ways, Miss McDear.
So, The Firm. This is the other half of the counter-programming, mm-hmm. because this is more of a... I consider this a dad picture.
A dad picture?
You know, a movie you take your dad to.
Oh, right. Yeah. Based on an airport read, John Grisham... Light action.
Light action. Well, I mean, it's light action. It's smart, as I do, Eric. It's smart in that it's a smart
It's
thriller.
Got a twist.
It's, you know, kind of grounded in reality, sort of. Yeah. There's a, you know, it's kind of just an old-fashioned Hitchcock thriller.
A very tight, light, quick. And rewatching it, I've watched it when it came out, you know. But I, of course, rewatched it again for this, and it's actually, it moves at quite a clip. I mean,
I think it takes a little long to get going, but...
Really? It seems that the point where he's, you know, a newlywed, you know, having his honeymoon period, to when he becomes aware that his firm is working for the mafioso, bam, bam, wanky man, feels like to me, you know?
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think... Yeah, well, I
the plot
I guess,
thickens. I'm just saying the plot thickens fairly quickly, I think, you know.
Yeah.
The action,
maybe
not so much. I mean, they have one foot chase at the end, you know.
Uh-huh.
There's not a lot of, you know, there's no explosions.
Oh,
there's no car
yeah.
chases.
And that's not what I mean, that it takes a while. It just, I think for me, I just didn't like the honeymoon period part because it's just like, okay, you know, when's the shoe gonna drop?
Yeah.
Because I'm everything in this movie is fucking white as hell.
Are you talking about the cast?
Oh yeah. Well, that and just white people, everything.
Yes.
And also, I'm like, I'm not really into '90s. I'm not really into '90s rich white. Like, isn't this like fucking fucking gorgeous? You know, style. Yeah. I'm not really into that.
You know, rich and bourgeois superficiality is annoying at any age.
Yeah. So it was just like, okay, let's. Get the shoe to drop. Let's find, because I didn't know much about this movie before I watched it.
Right.
So I was thinking The Firm. I was like, okay, maybe it's gonna be, you know, something like, you know, like they're gonna, like Tom Cruise is gonna get a case and it kind of affects the whole firm or something. But no, it's The Firm is the antagonist.
You mean a courtroom? You're talking like courtroom drama, like
right.
A Few Good Men or something.
Right.
Right.
You know, because I mean, you know, John Grisham movies are very court. Particularly The Client, A Time to Kill, they all involve a courtroom.
Yeah.
There's no courtroom really in this movie.
No, that he never actually does go to court in the course of the film. He goes to court off screen.
Right. Yeah, and that's kind of, and also I was a little bit weary about the 2.5 hour runtime, but, you know,
Well, they have, you know, several plot developments that kind of come along.
Okay,
You find that the firm is dirty, that possibly they've been murdering partners at the firm.
Uh-huh.
Then you find out that they're the front for the Chicago mob.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so there's a number of things that they do bring at you, you know?
Yeah, I'm trying to base... But when I was watching the movie, when I started watching it, I was like, you know, okay, like, you know, this is getting interesting. I really... Man, I forgot how good Gene Hackman was in the movie. Like, I legitimately forgot
how
good
he could
be.
The About Faces character does is really smoothly done, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That he's a bad guy, and then he becomes sympathetic, you know, towards the end. And then, this is a 25-year-old movie, so fuck you, I'm spoiling it. Gene Hackman gets whacked.
Yeah, off screen.
But yes, he does wind up, they mention the fact that he disappeared while diving. Even though he wasn't going diving, he had canceled his diving trip. You know,
yeah.
So the mafia had him done in, and you know, and here's the thing about this film: you're not going to get explosions, you're not going to get Michael Bay him. It's basically the movie revolves around tax fraud.
Yeah, and it's smartly written.
The bad guys the main heavy in the movie is Wilford Diabetes Oatmeal Brimley.
Brimley, yeah.
He's the main heavy in the movie. Grandpa Brimley.
Yeah. Diabetes. Yeah, which was charming because the movie really does work so hard in the blackmailing scene where he's like showing Tom Cruise that we have all this dirt
down
on
by the river. He's got his little beat up briefcase and he's got the little black and white prints of the dalliance on the beach.
Like his dialogue, like the movie and the acting that Tom is.
And then
giving.
You got Tobin Belder, that really really creepy guy. You know, there's the heavy kind of, you know,
the Nordic guy.
Being the exclamation point on that scene.
Yeah.
Gary Busey.
Gary Busey popped in.
Holly Hunter in this motherfucking movie. She's the fucking steal of show part here, you know.
She is. She is a scene stealer if there ever was one.
When you first see her, she's using one of these old-fashioned water boilers, the little coils you stick in your coffee cup to make, you know, instant cocoa or instant coffee or whatever.
Yeah.
And she goes, have you ever put one of these in a cup without any water? And he goes, no, I haven't. You know what happens? No, I don't. The lights go out. I just love the way she's sort of dancing over her coffee cup, you know. She's great. I mean, she is fantastic in this movie. She is by far and away the best part of this movie. You know?
She is, and she really does bring the comic chops, and she meets David Strahan again.
Strathairn, yep. The older brother. The older ne'er-do-well, imprisoned felony brother.
Convicted on manslaughter.
I would say, actually, at the end they have this really long and intricate foot chase scene. But for me, the first confrontation we have, a young Dean Norris and Tobin Bell, confront Gary Busey in his office, and they have a shootout, which is actually, for me, the most dramatic section of the film.
Well, that's when, like, you know how serious this is.
Right, and they do a good job. The shootout in Gary Busey's, Lomax's office,
right,
I thought was actually well-executed and well-mounted. I thought it was a good scene.
It is a really good scene.
And Holly Hunter under the desk, you know, cowering and crying, and she's covered with blood. It was, you know, very effective, I thought.
Yeah, it is very effective, and it's very effective because you're trying to figure out too, like, you know, how deep this whole thing is.
Right.
Because I think this is the scene before we meet the FBI, the old FBI agent man in the snow, right? Or is that before?
The Department of Justice, Stephen Hill, Mr. Law and Order. Yeah, he comes right after that. But we meet Terrence Ed Harris.
Right before.
Before that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we're still. Before the Department of Justice guy, we're still trying to figure out like how deep this goes.
Right after the honeymoon period, you have the two federal officers, Ed Harris and his partner, come to the sandwich shop and vaguely threaten Tom Cruise's character as they're ordering a sandwich.
Yeah, steak sandwiches.
Yes, on rolls.
On rolls. Yeah, and it's a... You know, it's all really well done. Like, the acting is well done.
Sidney Pollack is a good director. Yeah.
He is. And wasn't that him as a cameo as the pastor doing the...
It could very well have been. He did that a lot.
Yeah. I mean, I know he was an actor. Like, he would act in certain movies like Michael Clayton.
He oftentimes played bad guys. Like in Michael Clayton, he played one of the corporate bad guys.
Right.
That was later. I mean, he didn't die too much soon after Michael Clayton, did he?
I think that was 2008.
Yeah, 2008, 2009 that he died.
He died right before or after the Oscar.
Right.
The Oscar nomination.
Sidney Pollack was a very good director. Nora Ephron, you know, I've seen some of her work, is good. When Harry Met Sally was good. I wasn't so hot on the film we're discussing. And The Firm is also not Sidney Pollack's best work, I don't think.
What is his favorite? Because...
Oh, he did a bunch. I'm going to have to get back in and look at his roster.
He did Tootsie.
Tootsie was one, yes.
Out of Africa.
Out of Africa was another good one. Yeah, he did...
I think his last movie was Interpreter.
They Shoot Horses, Don't They, which wasn't bad. Jeremiah Johnson was good. 3 Days of the Condor, that was a Robert Redford movie.
Okay.
That was good. The Electric Horseman, another Robert Redford movie, which was okay. Out of Africa, Meryl Streep in that, wasn't it?
And I think Robert Redford in that,
again,
too.
Yeah. Absence of Malice with Paul Newman, another good one. Yeah. So, yes, he's got a good
resume,
and I like a number of his films. And, you know, Absence of Malice is this but better. Okay. Absence of malice is superior to the firm.
Right. And, yeah, and that's what I liked. Yeah, and that's one of the things I was... It's just a superior movie to almost everything I've seen so far. Like, yes, I still am on the side of, you know, it takes like 20 minutes to get into the movie. But still, like, it moves. Like,
so far. Sorry.
And about an hour in, I'm like, damn, this is like a fucking good thriller. Yeah. I'm trying to figure out how they're going to get out.
I will tell you the surprise of this retrospective for me was The Last Action Hero, which is a lot better than I had remembered it being. You know, it has issues and some problems, but it's a competent and well-directed action movie. This, I thought, was better when I first saw it. Now, it's okay, but it hasn't held up. The score is an issue.
Yeah.
The fact that, you know,
the blues.
Wilford Brimley, the weird over-the-top artificial blues soundtrack is kind of an issue. Diabetes Brimley is a heavy, is kind of come on. And the movie boils down to tax fraud. You know, this is a 2+ hour movie that boils down to Tom Cruise Xeroxing billing receipts. You know, really, there's a whole scene with like this really, you know, dun 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 dun, dun kind of music of him Xeroxing Xeroxing billable hour receipts.
Yeah, and that's what he uses to bring down the firm.
Yeah.
I mean,
is mail fraud, tax evasion because of the billable hours they've been overcharging.
Yeah, if you really handed this to a shitty filmmaker.
Yeah.
Or to a lesser grade Tony Gilroy, this could have been a really bad movie. This could have been... Because really, I mean, who cares? Like, even at the end of the movie when Ed Harris comes over, like, this isn't sexy.
It's not.
Yeah. And I'm like... And that's what's going to bring... and also, it kind of doesn't make sense on Tom Cruise's point of view because he's just like... Because I'm like... You realize you're dealing with a bunch of lawyers here. Lawyers can probably talk themselves out of tax evasion. They can talk them to a lesser sentence.
That's the sequel.
You might set this firm. You might destroy the firm's credibility, and maybe whack off some customers. But this firm will kind of rise again in the 2000s.
Yeah. Well, there's one issue that. Kind of is glossed over, which is actually pretty cold and cruel. Tom Cruise's character basically serves the rest of the firm up to the
mob,
the Chicago crime family, played by another Law and Order alum. What's his name? He was one of the cops in the earlier form of Law and Order.
Joe Mulatto or Joe?
No, not Joe Mulatto. His daughter was a big actress, too.
I'm going to try and get it, too. Dun, 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 dun,
dun, dun. Paul Sorvino. Yeah, he was in Law and Order. His daughter was a big hit in the 1000s. He's in the 90s. You know, she did action movies, even with... Chow Yun-Fat and Jet Li and stuff, you know?
Okay.
But, yeah, so basically, Tom Cruise serves Hal Holbrook up to be whacked and put cement shoes on by Paul Sorvino's character. That the implication is that he says, I'm the only one that didn't steal your money here with the billable hours. So, not only do they have the federal case against them, they've got Paul Sorvino as the Chicago head of the mafioso want to throw them into the friggin' Lake Superior. You know? You know? So they're on the outs with the feds and the mafia by the end of the movie.
Yeah, I guess that's a victory. Or a victory for Tom Cruise because I'm like... Because I was thinking during this whole speech with the mob, I'm like, dude... Just hand everybody over. Fuck it. Yeah,
he did. He basically served firm over on a platter.
No, I mean serve the mob too. Fuck it. Who cares?
Well, I mean they're probably going to be dead. You know, at the bottom of the Cayman Islands pretty soon.
Oh yeah. I mean everyone's. I'm sure the head of the firm, they're all like, their heads are sitting, waiting for the head for the block.
Yes.
So to speak. So, yeah, and that's kind of the end of the movie, is that Tom Cruise somehow pulls a, you know, a miracle out of his hat.
Yeah, he scams the law firm and the feds.
to basically, you know, get his brother to
out of
do
jail.
Well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He goes to the Caymans and meets Holly Hunter, bless her heart.
Yeah, and he gets his wife at the end.
Yeah, and they go back to Boston.
Yeah, and everything goes back to normal.
Yeah, it's a reset. It's like a sitcom. It goes back to the status quo.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like, damn, how? That's probably the funniest part of that whole movie, is like you just sitting there going, after everything, he somehow played everyone.
As the credits rolled, I actually had a curiosity that I thought would not be a bad sequel, is now he's reserved his bar. You know, he has not broken the ethics rules by giving over privileged information to the FBI. And he's also defeated the law firm. And that means that he has to figure out how to become a lawyer, you know, with no references, with the mafia kind of, you know, looking over his shoulder. The Fed's kind of looking over his shoulder. What does he do next to try to build a reputation? How shady does he actually go? You know? And I think that would be an interesting question for a sequel, for Mitch McDear, the character.
You see him
10 years later.
And or just he's got cut this, to like, now, the firm too.
Yeah, the firm too. And you have him as a shoebox lawyer who represents real shady guys. He's an ambulance chaser, right? And then, of course, the big boom thing, you know, a murder or an ethics violation or whatever comes along and throws him into turmoil, and he has to become a lawyer again, you know. And I think that would be not a bad sequel, you know, that try to make him into a lawyer again now that he's, you know, tried to, you know, distance himself from all this
stuff. Well, and
stuff,
also,
you know?
I'm sure this is all, like, in the public. Like, his name was mentioned
a lot.
Right,
and in the news. And as he said, his resume.
He probably wrote a book about it.
Sure, it could be.
Why not?
Yeah, and his resume up to that point was basically the most corrupt law firm in the country. So, you know, he was going to have a hard time getting work with any other reputable law firms, you know, mm-hmm. after that. He preserved his bar, his license, but at what cost? And I think that would be an interesting thing to examine, you know, how he's dealt with being, you know, hindered by his past
mm-hmm.
in a future film. I think that wouldn't be bad.
Yeah, I mean, to be fair, I think he would come out just okay. He would come out fine. I mean, he probably won't be a rich person, but I mean,
right.
once you do a book deal and all that, like, and maybe just start, like, a little firm in, like, some town in, small town in Massachusetts. You know, why, you know.
Just move to Marblehead.
Yeah, just, once you do something small for the rest of your life, just keep yourself busy. And after the $1 million book deal, so I'm sure this would, like, have, you know, I'm sure news outlets and book and publishers would be like, we'll pay you $1 million or like $500,000 each for this deal and that deal. And like after that, just, you know, get all that money.
But then he goes to Foxwoods Casino and blows it all.
Damn.
He goes to the Indian reservations, like the Mohegan Sun or Foxwoods, and blows the whole thing.
Oh, God.
In a weekend. He blows like $1 million book deal in a weekend.
Damn it. And his wife's like, damn you, I'm pregnant.
Yeah. Oh, Gene Triplehorn. Poor Gene Triplehorn.
But, yeah, I think.
And she had a thankless job in this movie. Gene Triplehorn, just the put-upon wife. It's, you know, not a very dynamic role, you know. And I felt sympathetic for her. I thought she did a decent job. But it's just,
I mean, she gets the raw end of the
deal. Oh, yes. And it's sort of a superficial role, you know. She basically winds up being window dressing for most of the part until she just basically at the end kind of...
Basically, yeah, and she kind of had to, like, kind of almost, like, give herself up to, you know, Avery.
Yep.
You know, who ultimately in the end is just like, no, fuck it. I don't want to do this.
Yep. Yeah. Oh, what a sweet guy.
Yeah. Wonder how many wives he's seen get murdered or done this to.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, I think The Firm is a really solid movie, and I think
it's okay.
And I think the reason it did so well is because it's a good movie, and it, you know, And, I mean, it was the only 4th of July movie that was out.
Yeah. It moves. I mean, I would say it's a quality movie. There's nothing wrong with it. The performances are solid.
Yeah. Know?
I would say 5 out of 10 stars, which for me is fairly decent.
Yeah, I would go a little higher. I would go, like, 8 out of 10. Because I was compelled throughout the most of the movie. Yeah.
I give it a medium showing, you know. But you rarely see me go any above 7 stars. I rarely go above 7 stars.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Sleepless in Seattle lasts more like 3. 3 out of 10.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
I wasn't a big fan. Like I said, The Holiday, much better movie. Notting Hill, much better
movie. Oh, yeah.
Hell, even a movie that I think is in the same realm, like The Runaway Bride, I watched recently, is another Gary superficial movie. Gary Marshall did that. It's Julia Roberts and Richard Gere. And it's superficial. It's goofy. It's kind of misogynist. But it's a lot more entertaining than Sleepless in Seattle, at least to me. You know?
All right.
That one's 4.5. 5, maybe.
All right. So with that said,
check out The Firm. It's okay.
Yep. So with that said, do you have anything... Do you have anything to plug before we go?
I am going to start my senior thesis, and I'm going to work on getting a producer and a core writing group to start with very soon, before the semester starts. So we're going with, my pitch is Bye Bye Baby, a musical romantic comedy short.
Okay. All right, and I'll put your email in the strip description below.
And I might reactivate the cardboard rocket to start working on that as my company to start meeting with people for that. So,
all right.
On the Facebook cardboard rocket, I'm reactivating that.
Okay, if that gets reactivated soon, I'll put it. I'll put it in later.
I'll shoot you a DM or something from there when I turn it back on. All right.
Okay. And with that, you can follow me on Twitter at MovieKale, and you can also follow this. The show's Twitter at The Youth Critic, and then you can also follow the channel that distributes this podcast at KHC Network. Thanks, everyone. We'll be back with you soon for, I guess, Weekend at Bernie's is the next one.
All right, Righteous. Okay, I love that. That's great. One of my favorite movies from '93.
All right.
Happy trails.
And we'll talk about its sequel.
Oh, man.
And on that note,
talk about breaking the law.
No, I'm just trying to figure out how far you want it bent.
As far as you can without breaking it.
That firm looks like a health hazard.
That's 4 dead lawyers.
None of them over the age of 45.
Where are you guys?
The FBI wouldn't have come after you if they didn't think they'd get to you. Now, what do you think made them think that?
I have no idea.
Well, they might know how important your young wife is to you.
Anything's possible. I'll tell you one thing. If those guys at the steak joint were feds, you better watch out for him.
We might be misreading McDear.
You've got nothing to be suspicious about.
I get paid to be suspicious when I got nothing to be suspicious about.
Why are you asking questions about dead lawyers?
What dead lawyers?
I know you'll do your best to protect the firm. Won't you, Mitch?
We have faith that you're going to be with us for a long, long time, Mitch. Fact is, nobody has ever left.